The court's ready to hear argument in Ridings Development versus Caldera. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. If it pleased the court, before we begin, I would like to introduce ProHoc counsel who are present today. First, we have Barbara Anisco, a member of the Bar of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, who will be arguing on behalf of Appellee Caldera Properties. With her and assisting is Pamela Tobin, also a member of the Pennsylvania Bar.
Well, welcome to the court. It's nice to have you with us. You probably know this week we celebrated Separation Day in Delaware when we broke away from Pennsylvania as the lower three counties. But we welcome you. Morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. Kevin Mangan from Womble, Carlisle, Sandridge, and Rice. With me today are two colleagues of mine from Womble, Carlisle, Paul Kaplan, who has previously been admitted pro hoc vice, who will be addressing the court. And also with us is Layla Ames from Womble.
Welcome to the court. It's nice to have you with us.
Good morning. Mr. Mangan said, I'm Paul Kaplan, and I am arguing on behalf of the Ridings as well as Centex. I think for purposes of this discussion, they're indistinguishable. There are five or so issues that I'm going to attempt to touch during my time. If I don't make it through them all, I will rely on our briefs, which I think pretty much cover the issues that I'm going to address today. As for the facts, just to give a really simple and brief overview, this was a real estate development project in Sussex County. Our client, the Ridings, is essentially to be the purchaser. Caldera is the seller. There were to be 225 lots, some associated amenities, and a wastewater treatment plant. We took on the first 75 lots. We then had an easement agreement that allowed us to construct the wastewater treatment plant, which, because of design considerations, was located on a parcel that we had not yet acquired. The core of the dispute before the court at this juncture is whether the plant that we built and that we paid for and that we own is available for free use by Caldera.
Now, let me ask you a question in that regard. If everything had gone perfectly as planned, and the lots were now owned by third parties, you know, homeowners,
right?
Not Caldera. Under the perfect plan, what would these third-party homeowners have to pay?
There would be certain obligations on an ongoing basis for sewer service, but my understanding, Justice, is that the right to use the plant would be a component of the purchase price for the house. It
right.
is embedded, if you will, in the purchase price of the house, which, of course, really gets to one of the main inequities in Judge Graves' decision, which is that if they were to be afforded free use of the lots, each of those lots would be available in the marketplace at a diminished price because they would not have to carry the embedded cost of the sewer treatment plant.
No, I understand that, but I just want to make sure that I was correct in my understanding of the facts, and that is, in a perfect world without these problems, the cost would have been recovered by selling the lots.
Correct.
Now the not from some connection fee or hookup fee, because Tidewater would have been involved by then. But now that the perfect plan didn't develop, your client would like to recover the cost, and you'd like to do that from Caldera, who now owns the lot, as opposed to a third party.
Well, I want to be clear about this. Our position here in our briefs at trial wasn't that there was an instant obligation on Caldera's part to pay us two-thirds of the plant cost because they had two-thirds of the lot. It was rather that just as we would be recouping the cost of that plant through home sales, they would be doing the same thing, and since they didn't have the expense of building the plant, that would be money that would come over to us. That would be, in my judgment, the fair, appropriate way to do this. While we're on that subject, I want to read from Judge Graves, who certainly knows a lot about this case. At a hearing that this is, I think, a very fair and clear summary of what transpired here. At an earlier hearing in the case where the issue was, at that time, they were contending that Caldera owned the plant because it was on their property and that by virtue of our default, there was a termination of the perpetual easement. In that context, there's a passage that's quite notable from Judge Graves. He said as follows, you are going to have to say, okay, bad things happen, unforeseen things happen. Your client is going to end up with parcels that are ready to be developed when the market turns around. If your clients want to participate in that utility that you have granted them the permanent easement in, then there is going to have to be some negotiations as to sharing the burden. Because if you look at it from an equitable point of view, all of that land was going to be sold with the cost factors of the plant spread out through the 225 lots. Your Honor, speaking to your point, now your people are basically saying, hey, they are the ones that walked away. We should get the service, but we don't have to pay for it. The court goes on to say, I don't know if that is an equitable point of view. Either you are all, I mean, with the equities, you can look to them as being the defaulted party, but that's something that if I find a perpetual easement, either you all are going to have to agree to some reasonable fashion through negotiations, or I don't know whether I have the authority or the ability to do that. I can enforce contracts and things of that nature, and that is something that was not anticipated. Therefore, equitable remedy is probably where that goes. Now, I don't believe if we look at...
Now, those comments are prior to trial.
Excuse me?
Those comments were prior to trial.
Those were at a hearing on an earlier motion where the court ultimately did rule it was a perpetual easement and the plant, therefore, belonged to us, albeit on property that they owned. And that's what the judge had to say. He went on to say, I think then counsel for Caldera said, this is a real problem. And the judge says, you are right. And then he said in somewhat colorful terminology, and that is all screwy Louie. But what I'm telling you right now is that as of today, I am not going to issue a decision immediately because we are going to have to talk about other things. Hopefully, when you all leave here, as Bob Dylan said, you won't need a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing. And then you all are all smart attorneys and business people. Like I said, what you have to do is you have to turn the page and not look behind the mess right now. You are all going to have to look in the future and try to figure out how to resolve it. Finally, he says, if Centex Ridings is basically saying you are going to pay X percentage in order to hook up and spread the costs out, I don't think that's an unreasonable circumstance to be doing. Judge Graves made it clear throughout the opinion, the ultimate opinion that he rendered, that he did not find any language or provision in the agreement that governed this situation. That is why in our last brief we raised the issue that then created a little problem about.
But just to get back to the comments that you just read to us from
Yes.
Judge Graves, isn't it evident that what he was doing there was trying to light a fire under each side to get the case settled?
Absolutely. Absolutely right. But it is also clear that he understood that from the outset of this project, when they were exclusively sellers and we were exclusively buyers, everybody understood, as would be the case all across Sussex County, that if you're going to build a plant to serve 225 lots, which is exactly what transpired here, then the price for that has to be recovered from all 225 lots, not just from 75. And so you're absolutely right. In an ironic way, that takes me back to the point about this ultimately being an advisory opinion. Because even as we stand here now, the property is undeveloped. There is nothing happening there. The property is likely to change hands. It may be reconfigured. Nobody's building a lot of new homes in Sussex County these days. And so when I read the Stroud case, Stroud versus Milliken, and looked at the guidance the court gave on you're only supposed to decide cases in court when it is clear, fixed, certain, the facts aren't going to change, the decision is precise. That's not what happened here, because even now it's uncertain what this opinion will mean in the years to come.
Can I ask a slightly different question here? You actually purchased, or your client purchased, 75 of the 225 lots, right?
Correct.
Let's assume for the moment that you phase two and phase three went through and you purchased all of the lots. But right after you did that, that's when the housing market collapsed. And you now have 225 houses that you're trying to sell, and that you're trying to include in that sale the proportionate cost of the wastewater facility, right?
Correct.
But because the economy has turned sour, you realize that you have to drop that number out of your sales price in order to get your sales price down enough so that people are going to buy it. Right?
Well,
I mean, isn't that a reasonable hypothetical that when it comes to selling a place, you don't necessarily get to sell it at the price you wanted to?
Well, of course. The point, though, is that money being fungible, yes, there would be an element of, I don't know what math is, $30,000 that would, in our perception, be what we need to recover to pay off the plant. And that to do that, we were going to sell a house for $400,000, and now, lo and behold, we're going to have to sell it at $300,000. That's a risk we actually took. That market risk is one that we took. But I should say this: Caldera likewise took that risk, because I can posit a different hypothetical. We buy the first 75 lots, and before we spend a dollar on the plant, it occurs to us that this is not such a good idea. Maybe we should just sit tight and hold our hand pat, let them take the $1.2 million. Let them have their property back. At that point in time, there would be no claim from Caldera that we owed them a plant. They would be in precisely the same boat that we're in. Each of us would be sitting there with a piece of this subdivision completely undeveloped. We would not have any obligation to them to build a plant. They would not have any obligation to build a plant. And the parties would have to come together and work something out.
Okay, all right. So is it your position that there can't be a resolution of the issue about the wastewater plant because it was not part of what the parties contemplated and there is no contract that covers it?
I think it is clear that there is no contract provision that covers it.
No, I didn't say a contract provision. Are you saying that this wastewater plant is outside of the contract? It is not something that whether the contract specifically provides for if this happens, then you do X, but that somehow the parties never had a meeting of the minds about what was going to happen to the wastewater facility, and therefore it can't be resolved on the basis of the contract.
I think if I follow all of your question, that I agree with that. It was the only thing that was contemplated in that contract that there would be a wastewater treatment plant built on site. And it was assumed by everybody, including the seller, that the 225 lots would be underwriting the expense of that plant. And so there is nothing in the contract that just speaks to this at all. And
well, didn't the contract contemplate that this plant would be built at no cost?
No. If you were making reference to the contract provisions that Judge Graves relied upon, respectfully, I think that he just absolutely misunderstood the very purpose of those provisions. Those were not random provisions that say we're going to build a plant at our cost, and if things fall apart, we can't charge you. Those were very specifically. 9.5.4 of the contract has to do with condition of the property when we take it from them, the physical condition of the property, and it is in a release, which is standard in real estate contracts, that says I'm taking this as is, where is, which is another subpart of the very same provision. Ironically, I noted yesterday that at the bottom of that thing, it says we, the purchaser, have consulted counsel to make sure we understand what this means. This would never mean that down the road, if things change, there isn't an issue that if they want to use our property, and to Your Honor's point, it's really a simple concept. It's called private property. That's our plant. If they want to use it, they need to negotiate with us and come to terms. In a free market, that is what would happen. Because if we don't sell use of that plant, we don't ever recoup our money. So, therefore, we're incentivized to do it. They're incentivized to pay something for use because every landowner in Sussex County has to do that. And that resolves itself over time in some market that we can't really predict. But you can't get it out of this contract. The same thing on the subject of the lien provision that Judge Graves relied upon, which really says nothing more complicated than if we're doing work on your land, during the period that we're doing that, there may be mechanics liens assessed against it. And therefore, we Caldera wants to make sure that they won't get a lien against their property because we don't pay our bills. So we hold them harmless for that. It doesn't speak to the question of what happens a year or 2 years down the road. If they have a lot and we have a plant, they don't just get to say, hello, we want to tap into your plant. It's our property. We paid for it. We built it. And as Judge Graves said before the trial, that's the fair resolution. That's what's consistent with how people do business. He had it embedded in what he was saying about lawyers, smart people will work this out. One thing I want to emphasize, because time really does go fast here, the liquidated damages provision is not merely a liquidated damages provision. And it says in the clearest conceivable way that if they get the liquidated damages, there are no further obligations under this contract. Judge Graves seemed to find after trial that there was an obligation to allow them to use the plant under the contract. That's utterly contrary to the simple meaning of that language. And it goes on to say that they waive all remedies, not just for damages. They waive all remedies for damages, including damages and specific performance. And one could make the case that that's exactly what they're getting. If you posit that it's a 225-lot plant and we have to provide it for free, well, we gave them the liquidated damages, and under that language, they're not allowed to demand specific performance that we'd let them plug into our plant for free. So I see I'm now cutting into my rebuttal time, so I will sit down. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. We would not be here today but for the fact that Ridings, and for purposes of argument, Ridings and Centex are interchangeable, but that Ridings breached this contract. Ridings is the one that had the opportunity and the ability and the right to purchase all the lots. There were 225 lots in this subdivision. All these 225 lots pursuant to record plan, final record plan, were to be served by an on-site treatment plant, and that Ridings built. Ridings determined that the deal they had made was no longer economically feasible for them, and as a result of that, Ridings decided to walk away. They didn't want to allocate the cost of the treatment plan among all 225 lots because it wasn't economically feasible. They'd rather get the benefit of a write-off. And that's what they did. They walked away from the deal and then tried to impose that same deal on Caldera, the non-breaching party, and refused to acknowledge any right of access to this treatment plan unless Caldera agreed to reimburse them at exorbitant full cost value for the cost of that treatment plant.
Yeah, we know what it costs to build the treatment plant, and it was built on Caldera's land. Anywhere in the record do we have a value for that land?
Your Honor, the obligations under unjust enrichment is
no. I'm not. Just tell me, yes or no. Do we know the value of the land that the plant's on?
There, not a specific value number, no. There was testimony in a record, Your Honor, that Beezer, which is the parent of Ridings, wouldn't even pay $40,000 per lot. You have to understand that the original deal was over $80,000 per lot. Ridings walked away from the deal when they tried to renegotiate it when it was half that.
No, I understand. And my question's not this complicated. Mm-hmm. The plant is on land that Caldera owned. How much land? What was the value of that land?
There is no specific testimony as to the value of the land. There is general testimony about the drop in of real estate values in the market and generally talking of similar properties going for under $15,000. So there's some general, I believe, $18,000, $15,000 in terms of the lots, but we acknowledge, Your Honor, that without access to sewer, these lots can't be sold. I mean, you can't develop a residential development without being without having the ability to connect a sewer.
Well, does the wastewater plant take up one lot? Is that basically what its footprint is?
No, what it is there's 225 lots. There's a separate parcel. I mean, there's in phase two, there is a plot of land that's reserved for the wastewater treatment plant.
Right.
There's
fields. How big is that and all the disposal fields? How much land is encompassed in the wastewater facility and the fields? Is it the equivalent of two lots, three lots, one lot?
Your Honor, I believe the lots are like quarter-acre lots, and I believe that, about 2 acres. I mean, two lots for the treatment plant, approximately two lots for a treatment plant, but not including the disposal fields. There's additional land there.
How big is that section?
The disposal fields? Another 25 lots?
Okay, thank you.
All right, so they built a plant on what would otherwise have been 27 lots.
Your Honor, yes. But then the plant, there would be no sewer for the plant. You have to go back to how this project was conceived and what the understanding of the parties were with regard to this treatment plant. Right from the beginning, Centex's underlying documents, internal documents evaluating during a feasibility period, this plan and this purchasing of this property with the land development plan that was attached, a preliminary plan was attached with the treatment plan. Everybody knew going into this deal there was going to be a treatment plant to serve 225 lots. The internal memo from Centex indicates it's going to be a sunk cost that Centex is going to be absorbing. Thereafter, they signed this contract attaching the preliminary plan, which again provides a wastewater treatment plant serve 225 lots to be serviced by a private utility. What happens is they're renegotiating. They come now and approach Caldera and say, we want you to reallocate the return of the deposit among the closings because you're going to have security. You're going to have the treatment plant as security. And as a result of that, in that statement, the First Amendment was entered into, which reallocated the deposits so that more was returned at the first closing. Then there's another agreement. The Second Amendment is entered into. And in that agreement, there's a provision that parties discuss reimbursements. And in terms of reimbursements, there's certain agreements reached between the parties to amend the contract to provide specifically under what circumstances Centex would be entitled to certain reimbursements. Sewer is not included as a reimbursement. After that, there is a provision, though, that contemplates that there may be a potential breach in with regard to this contract, and it specifically provides for easements, cross easements, to be provided for Caldera for, among other things, sewer. There's testimony in the record that's uncontroverted that basically talks about what the standard of the industry is. The standard in the industry is that if you're going to get reimbursements, then you have to put them in the contract. If not, they're not entitled to reimbursements. That testimony is uncontroverted. It was also Mr. Hoffer, who was the witness produced by defendants, indicated that it's whatever the contract says. It's not for the court to rewrite the party's contract. It doesn't make sense that you would have a contract with a $1.2 million liquidated damage provision, and then the party breaches and walks, and then instead of getting $1.2 million, the non-breaching party has to pay the breaching party, as Judge Graves recognized, $6 million.
I understand that. Let's talk about something else in the record. It appears that when the wastewater treatment plant was approved, for want of a better term, and the ultimate turnover to Tidewater was contemplated, and that at least as far as the regulatory authorities, other than the parties, the regulatory authorities, the plant was to service all 225 lots. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. The CPCN was granted to Tidewater with the consent of Caldera, and in that, the CPCN application said that it's supposed to be for 225 lots to be serviced by Caldera. The DENREC applications for purposes of construction of the treatment plant indicated that it was going to be a system for 225 lots in the subdivision to be the plant to be owned and operated by Caldera. It's critical here that Ridings cannot own this plant once it reaches 50 houses. It's virtually approaching that number now. Connection to the 50th is not that far away.
All right, so help me understand everyone's arguments, and correct me if I'm wrong on the record. Your position is we now own the other 150 lots, and we get to connect at no additional expense, just as a third-party homeowner would have gotten to connect at no additional expense. Their point of view is that since you own the lots and you're not the third-party homeowner, you can recover the cost of connecting through sale of the lots, just as we would have covered the cost of connecting or pro rata share the plant through the cost of the lots. And your position is, well, things have changed. This was never contemplated. And you agreed to assume the risk of building a plant for 225 lots. If you can't recover the money by selling the other 150 lots, that doesn't mean we have to pay you any more than any third-party owner would have had to pay you. Is that basically your argument?
Basically, Your Honor, except that in terms of not contemplated, the economy maybe wasn't, the extent of the downturn of the economy maybe wasn't contemplated, but the default, potential default and not proceeding was contemplated, and Centex assumed, and Ridings assumed the risk. They built a plant to serve all 225 lots, build improvements, the disposal fields on the property, even though they didn't own all the lots, knowing that they may walk away from the deal.
I understand. So help me describe for me, if you will, why Judge Graves had a change of heart. If we look at his preliminary ruling, he seems to say, now, this isn't really equitable for Caldera not to have to participate in sharing the plant. As you said, he later said, it's really unfair to have someone have to pay millions of dollars for this plant when the other party breached it. So was that his rationale, or was there another reason why he decided the equities weighed in your client's favor?
I think, Your Honor, two things. One, with regard to the first hearing, that was really an attempt by Judge Graves to put some pressure on the parties to try to amicably resolve that. It was purely, he even directed us to try to go to mediation. Wasn't able to resolve the issue. The reason the judge decided the way he did was because the evidence was uncontroverted that there was never any intent that Caldera would have to pay under any of the contract documents. There was the plans and all the recorded documents that run with the land contemplated all along that there would be a plan for 225 to serve 225 lots. And the parties had no expectations before. When they built the plant, they weren't building it with the expectation they would get reimbursed. It was only down the road when they decided that the deal didn't work for them anymore, that allocating that risk among 225 lots didn't work for them, that they walked away and then tried to allocate two-thirds of that cost. They presented no evidence in terms of, in terms to have an unjust enrichment, you have to have an unjust enrichment. And they presented no evidence of that the enrichment has, to the extent it exists, is unjust. To right now, Your Honor, the evidence, we had six witnesses testify at trial, multiple exhibits introduced at trial, as well as deposition testimony. If the preliminary, as I said, if I go list through the list, the preliminary plan contemplated a treatment plant for 225 lots. So there's no issue that the homeowners in this development have to be served by, or entitled to be served by this treatment plant.
Can I interrupt for a second? You know, have the full use of the treatment plant, right?
No,
for,
Your Honor.
For 225 lots.
We have an order from the judge declaring two things, and I think they're two separate concepts. One is that that all 225 lots in this subdivision have the right to connect to the treatment plant. The next issue is reimbursement for the treatment plant. We have a decision from the judge that says that, from Judge Graves, that they're not entitled to in reimbursement. Because the contract doesn't provide
okay,
it.
Okay, fine. But
now,
wait a
right
second.
Now,
wait,
water.
Stop. You've got 225 lots that have no burden on them, if you will, of having to have the added cost of a share of what the cost of building the plant was. So you've got 225 lots, arguably, that you can sell for $100,000 a lot, whereas the other side has 75 lots that it has to sell for $125,000 a lot, because that's how much a proportionate share of the cost of the wastewater treatment would be. Why is that not a benefit?
Well, Your Honor, in this instance, one, Ridings created the situation. They created the breach. They could have allocated among 225. They did not. With regard to Caldera at this point, they're seeking a judgment against Caldera, a declaration that Caldera has to pay. And in that instance, the property's imminent. You know, there's foreclosure threats. There may be a foreclosure sale unless they want to somehow lien the property. And Judge Graves already determined they're not entitled to a lien on the property for the cost of treatment plant because the underlying lots, homeowners, are not. There's no obligation for them to pay. And so the only way that Ridings can recover is to get a judgment against Caldera, where Caldera may ultimately not be able to do anything with this property. Because of the circumstances of this breach, Caldera may lose the property, but may be stuck with a judgment. Well, that's certainly not fair.
Okay, but let's say things work out well, and Caldera, you know, the economy, there's an upturn. Caldera sells 150 lots and makes, you know, considerably more money on those sales than the other side, because Caldera doesn't have to include a cost for the treatment plant. Isn't that a benefit beyond what anybody agreed upon?
No, Your Honor, because I don't think you can sit here and speculate what could be. You look at what is. And the bottom line is you look at what the market is today, and there has been no testimony offered in terms of the value of this purported benefit, no evidence that's provided by Ridings as to the value of this purported benefit. Yes, we understand we cannot develop this property without sewer. Yes, we understand that and have been detrimentally affected by Ridings' position that we can't connect, the lots can't connect because we can't sell unless we have some sort of that final determination that these lots can access sewer. But to speculate that in 10 years, 5 years, or however many years, the lots are going to become more valuable and therefore this benefit becomes more valuable, we have to look. Ridings walked away from the deal because it didn't work. So why should now it work for Caldera? It doesn't work for Caldera either. That's why you have to go back. There is a relationship. The relationship of the parties is governed by contract. It's not like this treatment plant was built where there was no contract and no provision for building the treatment plant. There was no understanding that it was going to be built for 225 lots, or they started building it and Caldera agreed to reimburse, or was agreeing or understood that it would reimburse, and then they didn't. In this instance, there was never any agreement to reimburse. Courts shouldn't create a better bargain for the parties that they made in that instance. And two, without any evidence, concrete evidence presented by Ridings as to what the value is to Caldera, there is no basis for finding an equitable remedy for them based on value. I think the record is noticeably absent by that. It's not. The court should keep in mind that this plant cannot be owned by Caldera after the 50th lot. By Ridings. So therefore, it's not Ridings can't charge a connection fee. All they're entitled to, if they're entitled to anything, would be a contractual right to reimbursement because the parties had a contract. That doesn't exist. Ridings is not a public utility, and in that instance, there's tariffs imposed by the Public Service Commission. Now, if the court's looking, that would govern how much of a connection fee that can be charged, and the lots will pay that. The other issue, right, Caldera has never taken a position that Ridings lots can't use this plant. They sought to, even when they were claiming the right to the treatment plant, seek an interpretation of the easement agreement, there was never an attempt to prevent Ridings lots to connect. That was a reaction, an attempt to get access for the other lots in the treatment plant. The other thing, Your Honor, in terms of the equities, Caldera sought along the, somewhere along during the course of this litigation to have Tidewater serve them through another facility, Wallendale. There's evidence in the record that says that when they sought to do that because of the positions taken by Ridings here, Ridings stood up before the Public Service Commission and said that this plant was built for 225 lots, that the lots have to connect to that plant, that Caldera has no right to take its lots to a different facility that had a more reasonable connection charge. So to say, to draw the equities where, in this instance, Ridings breaches, imposes all these obligations and tries to impose non-contractual obligations on Caldera because of the breach, tries to use the liquidated damage provision as some sort of affirmative tool, as a sword, puts Caldera basically, because of the breach, in a situation where its lenders, where the loans are called and the property gets put in a foreclosure, and all these issues are coming down, and then stands firm in terms of taking the unreasonable positions that the lots can't connect unless they reimburse them two-thirds of their actual construction cost, which is all the evidence that's in the record. That created a totally inequitable situation that Caldera could not deal with. And in turn, I mean, I think the judge had, if the court reviews the record that's attached to the briefing, the record is extensive and large part undisputed in terms of the use of who can use the plant, whether Ridings is entitled to any form of reimbursement, whether under the contract or under equitable principles. And the judge spent a long time and wrote an over an 80-page opinion, evaluated all the evidence, and I think the judge's findings are entitled to deference by this court, who sat and heard the witness testimony and all the facts before it. His initial statements in his original opinion related more to trying to get the parties to settle, and also on a very incomplete record. It was based on some very brief briefing. I don't know if the court would like to hear anything about the attorney's fees section of the judge's opinion, which we did not, which we had briefed. And if there's any other questions on this point, which is a linchpin of this case, it really determines basically the survivability of the Caldera entity in terms of this development.
Thank you very much.
I don't want to completely overlook. In our brief, we have a section about interest, which was the only monetary award granted, and I just want to touch very quickly on the fact that our point is they didn't ask for it. It was awarded as damages, essentially, by Judge Graves, based upon no evidence in the record that there was any equity in the other property that secured the return of the deposit, which I want to just remind the court had a $2 million. The issue about the release was to release it down to a $2 million loan against the property. The judge, in a one page, gratuitously says, we tied up the equity. Webster says equity is the value of property above any encumbrances on the property. There was a $2 million loan. We held a mortgage on that property unrelated to this transaction, and therefore there simply is no proof that we did anything that harmed them at all with respect to that issue. Now, back to the core of the case, I think that my point of view on this is very simple. We don't need a judgment in our favor from the court. I think what I tried to make clear in my earlier conversation was leave the parties where they are. You have a contract that does not address this issue. What we've heard from Caldera is the contract contemplates that all 225 lots get to use the plant. We agree. Let the free market address when the time comes. As Your Honor had asked about, what's the market going to be? The truth of the matter is that if the market comes back, somebody, whether it's Caldera or somebody else, will want to build houses on those lots, and they will come knocking on our door and say, can we buy some sewer capacity? And there will be a market price that makes sense, because we'll want to sell it, they'll want to buy it. The contract simply doesn't cover it. Now, they say it doesn't say that we get reimbursed. Fine. At the time of the contract, nobody was contemplating there would be anything to reimburse us for.
And how do you see all of this working after the 50 lots are sold?
It's another thing that is frankly unclear. It's unclear in the text of the judge's decision.
I know, but you must have thought about how your client's going to get their money after 50 lots are sold.
At some level we have, Your Honor. The issue is going to be we're going to have a negotiation and an economic arrangement with Tidewater, if they are still the party we have to transfer to, and there will be some economic allocation of what happens depending upon what they can do and so on and so forth. So I really don't know, but that's the concept would be that to the extent they're able to charge, then they would do it. Judge, I want to come
but
back.
But the judge gave you the opportunity to work that out, and apparently you could not.
And the reason that it wouldn't at that time is there was no market urgency for that to happen. Nothing was happening. The ground was fallow. Nobody was buying houses. So when there is an urgency at some future point, back to my issue about this being an advisory opinion, then it will resolve itself.
Well, did you ask the court to stay the proceedings until some market change?
Your Honor, I'll tell you, if you look at the record in this, and I was not involved in the court below, there was a lot of momentum to what was going on between the parties. But I do want to say, Judge Graves said, and this is very important, they argue about risk allocation, that we didn't transfer the risk to them. That's not correct. The damages limitations did that for us. We knew that we would lose $1.2 million. And life's not so bad for Caldera. They get the property back. They got $6 million in the transaction from us for the first closing. They got $1.2 million. And they've got a plant there that's ready to serve them. All we need is at some future time, not under this agreement because it doesn't cover it, at some future time, there will be a transaction available to resolve this, I assure you. And when he says, when Judge Gray says equity will deal with this, what equitable remedy is he talking about? You know, it's not specific performance. It can't be. It's ruled out. So where does the remedy come from under equity in this situation? Thank you. My time is up.
Thank you. Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.